Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle. Please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features. March 15th, 2024, episode number 116. Taking a break from the solar powered computing, doing that office work because it's a cloudy day with some blessed rains. And so I'm going to take this opportunity to enjoy the ambiance of the sound of the rain while getting a bit more philosophical than usual, but it's timely because of a recent episode of The Daily. It's a show by the New York Times where they revealed some new, very compelling scientific evidence of some of the physical brain trauma of what's affectionately called the boom and bang of what veterans are exposed to in training and in combat. And my lane, if you will, the lane that I'm operating from is a lane where I'm adjacent to professional soldiers, and the warriors who are professional soldiers, I am adjacent to them in my lane as a warrior who is not a professional soldier and who is, I don't want to say paramilitary, but certainly an adjacent security force in my own right, as we all are as individuals. And whether or not we are team players with national security or we're sour grape agitators that aren't really finding ways to integrate or to be in harmony with the national security forces at all scales, you know, that's where you have three-letter agencies who help us sort that out. And you know, there's certain protocols that we all have to abide by if we want to stay on the right side of the law, and luckily we're obliged within those legal parameters to own weapons, to learn how to use them safely, to operate them, store them safely and in legal compliance, transport them safely, and beyond just weapons themselves, to actually be tactically proficient so that we can operate as civilian reserves for times of need as a well-organized militia. There's a huge gap, obviously, and that's what is part of what the show is about, is the gap between professional soldiers and those civilians who feel that they have a duty to be strong and to be defensive of what they care about, their land, their community, their nation, etc. And for there to be more reasonable and less extremist avenues to express that energy so that we can be in compliance and we can be candidates for a well-organized militia called upon in times of need, much like the way that the FEMA established the community emergency response training and the community emergency response teams as civilian auxiliary organizations with training similar to first responders, but with a lower grade of authority and liability to an extent. I mean, there's a lot of nuance there, but the point being, I mean, if you look at the community emergency response teams and community emergency response training, that is what I believe is lacking for there to be something like a well-organized militia that isn't just a pose, if you will, or a sort of a sneering menace that's not really on board with being a part of a broader coalition of patriotism. So with all that said, yes, I consider myself personally a veteran of the drug war. And I've spoken about that in previous episodes. I'm not going to go into my bona fides, and I'm not trying to tell a bunch of war stories, but I will state clearly that, you know, there's no trademark, copyright, or monopoly on the term warrior. Certainly there's that sort of notion that all soldiers are warriors, but not all warriors are soldiers, you know what I mean? So that leaves it open for people to be creative about how they want to express themselves. And I don't want there to be myself any hard-coded, written in stone definition of what a warrior is. I think it has to do with initiation. I think it has to do with standing up for what you believe in, and most importantly, being willing to sacrifice and even sacrifice your bodily integrity and endure suffering and deprivation and physical harm and emotional harm in the act or in operations in furtherance of defending your land, your family, your community, your nation, etc. There are those, you know, it crosses all genders. It's not, yeah, to me, it's not that you have to be a man to be a warrior. It's not that you have to be a professional soldier to be a warrior. It's not that you have had to have what they would call confirmed kills to be a warrior. It is a title that anyone can aspire to or attribute to themselves in whatever domain. And I think probably the best, most useful sort of reference I would make is when Dan Inosanto, the Filipino martial artist par excellence, who worked closely with Bruce Lee and was one of Bruce Lee's training partners throughout the development of Jeet Kune Do, and he himself has been a teacher of Jeet Kune Do. He was an influence on me. I don't even know now at this point. I don't follow him closely enough now to know. I'm hoping that he's alive and well, but he may have passed. I don't know at this very moment what his where his soul is at. But I know he has been an influence on my life, certainly in earlier chapters when I was more at my peak of my very religious martial arts training. But he, in a lecture and a demonstration that he gave, like a martial arts demonstration and a lecture, he made a statement to the effect of, I'll be paraphrasing, that you know, there's all kinds of different warriors. If you work in medicine, you're a doctor, you're a warrior for health, you're fighting disease. And he went on with a list, I believe, of different fighters who were fighting wars of different kinds. So yeah, however, I certainly understand the importance of being very clear about not confusing and not claiming any what they call stolen valor, and that this is why I'm getting into this nuance. But the reason why I think it's very important to stand in solidarity between and amongst warriors of different professions and different titles is that we who endure sacrifice and suffering for the greater good, put ourselves at risk and then endure harms in that process more so than those who are on the soft center of society, that we're on the perimeters of trying to defend them and risking ourselves in whatever capacity that may be. Between and amongst us, I think we need to have solidarity, and that's why I'm very much in attempting to bridge the gap between veterans of the military, of any military, and permaculture designers who understand the need for more, understand the need for peace lovers to harden and secure the sites that they design and develop all throughout the world, that that's lacking and that utopian pacifism is not sufficient. We can't just pray and sing, and some people would say purple breathe away the threats that are looming. And since I started this show, and I started this, I would say, well, I claimed the domain. I claimed the domain tacticalpermaculture.com. So if anyone else had thought to do that, I was the first one to do it. But really, for me, that goes back over 10 years now to the first tactical permaculture meetup. I still have the schedule for that meetup, where we were at the time. I was living on land teaching permaculture, and I recruited onto that land a professional combat tactical training instructor who worked for a very reputable tactical training organization at the time, and we were talking about integrating permaculture design training with tactical training and calling it tactical permaculture. So it was that, and then that project site and that relationship that we were forming, it's a long story short, sparing the details. there was a romantic weak point between myself and the owner of that land, and therefore eventually it there were issues that came up, and then I had to make the decision to extricate myself from that relationship and therefore that land project. And he stayed behind. I mean, my partner was a woman, though. Not that it matters, but I brought him, me and my partner recruited him to live on the land, and we were going to do tactical permaculture together and make a brand out of it. And it wasn't a love triangle, although there were some interesting moments, but we talked about the anthropology of, shall we say, romantic hospitality. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But the point being, I'm just reiterating at this stage, checking in a bit on the philosophy of this, because right now I'm doing this lone wolf, but I am building out a legitimate permaculture training camp that is more and more every day accommodating to teaching and facilitating a legitimate 72-hour permaculture design course with the auxiliary or extracurricular modules of tactical training. And this region that I'm in is very conducive to all kinds of tactical training to a degree that I won't even mention, but that is fully legal and compliant and legitimate. But there is a strategic location component to where I'm at doing this that is extremely advantageous to a tactical community being involved. So to me, the tactical industry is what unites warriors of all different types, because whether you're a law enforcement officer warrior or a military warrior or a homesteader or a back to the lander or just an urban survivalist or whatever you are, we all shop at the same tactical suppliers for our kit. So to me, that's the sort of umbrella big tent term that that transcends soldiers, warriors, police officers, etc. And you know, I happen to be, I guess if you want to call it, I'm a guerrilla warrior. And I'm fighting the good fight within the drug war, and feel like I almost always have. I was basically, in my life history, just a tiny side note, if I want to make this an elevator pitch for my warriordom, my warriorship, it really is that, you know, I set out to explore the other side as a very young adolescent, and I was quickly peer pressured into what you might call the dark side of the urban drug street culture, but I still had a propensity and yearnings for the more transcendent modalities of expanding consciousness. And sorting all that out over the course of decades, I became a very much a recovered from synthetic hard drugs and an advocate for the healing powers of entheogens and natural, totally non-synthetic so-called drug compounds in order to help heal from the wounds caused by the hard drugs that I had done and the traumas that I experienced of all kinds, which I won't go into. But again, it's not just the tactical dimension that I'm trying to build bridges with, it's also the trauma. Because as a veteran of the drug war myself, the ongoing drug war, I have a lot of trauma that got me into drugs in the first place and that I'm mitigating with better choices of so-called drugs on the other side of it. And what that means is that I'm in the same boat with the PTSD survivors that are sometimes given the most, for good reason, the sort of most attention and acknowledgement and sometimes resources, but certainly are deprived of some of the freedoms of civilian drug warriors. Because if you're a veteran military warrior with combat experience that has led to traumatic brain injury and a more nebulous psychological phenomenon that would be called post-traumatic stress disorder. So if you have TBI and PTSD from service in the military as a warrior in combat, or as we know now, even as someone who did not deploy in combat but was training and did a lot of boom and bang, i.e. firing weapons in training and having those shock waves of explosions damage the fine wiring inside of the brain. That's some of the research that I was mentioning from that Daily Show that came out. That's the timely anchor to me expressing this and reiterating this and verbalizing, articulating this now, is that the alliances that need to be built, to me, the permaculture is the ultimate alliance builder across any disparate group for extending the olive branch, for mending the fence and growing some fruit vines on that fence. To me, the ultimate methodology for peace on earth is permaculture. And it's just a matter of, once you are permaculture pilled, if you will, and you understand how there's really no other game in town like it, there's certainly other games in town that aren't permaculture, but there are probably almost none that are anywhere close to it or near it in terms of what it offers as a methodology of design to repair and heal the earth and to rebuild resilient and non-toxic communities. I could define it a million different ways, but the point being, we're taking responsibility for our own survival and that of the next generations. We're taking that responsibility in our own hands, and we're moving towards a non-toxic future in so doing. That's as simple as I could put it. So if we're going to take care of our own needs, and we're going to do it without poisoning ourselves and poisoning the earth and damaging and destroying and defoliating the landscape of the earth, then we're having to really figure out how to make peace. Because what does war do? It poisons the environment. The legacy, the toxic legacy lasts for, it could be infinite, the toxic legacy of the weapons that we're using now and that we have now. But it is the antithesis of the kind of work that we would be doing in permaculture to create stability and resilience and to have strong, rich ecosystems to dwell within, where we have abundance that we don't need to fight over. That's obvious. I think anybody in permaculture realizes and is compelled by a vision of peace and restoration of harmony between peoples of all nations, all ethnicities, finding ways to harmonize with each other and the patterns of nature so that we can really put our best efforts against or for buffering the chaos of nature. That's what we're really here to do. That's what we're capable of doing with our intelligence and with our technology, is that let's build smarter shelters. Let's build safer shelters. Let's have more cooperative economic models. All the things that would allow us to mitigate the harms that we don't have control over. We have control over whether or not to declare war on each other. We do not have control over certain things like natural disasters. The best way we can mitigate those is by design. And if all of our effort and energy is going into warfare and combat and conflict, then that leaves us all refugees on our own planet. So if permaculture is the substrate that we're trying to grow alliances within, then everybody who is a certified permaculture designer, they know who their low-hanging fruit are within their community, whether they're part of a religious organization or they're part of a student body organization, or they are in some geographic relationship with others, or economic, whatever it may be. We, as permaculture designers, we're all obliged to think about who do we form alliances with, who are the most immediate to us, whether friend or foe. We need to make alliances with both, but who are those people, and how do we integrate people in the design doing the social permaculture element? So for me, the social permaculture now is to branch out with other trauma survivors who are warriors who have served in different theaters of war, shall we say. I've served in theaters of war that some of the military warriors would say that they would, I may have quoted the person before, but I'm gonna do a paraphrase of a statement that was made by a very esteemed, very well-established former Green Beret combat veteran who said, the types of trauma that I personally myself have experienced. No, I'm referencing myself. He said, how do I put this right? He said, I would rather be blown up in war than be traumatized. I'm going to paraphrase this, traumatized in certain ways that people get traumatized in, ways that I've been traumatized in. So it was very validating for me, and I've said this before, for someone who would say that combat veterans don't have the monopoly on trauma, that there are forms of trauma that stick with you as much, if not more. It's not about comparing them per se. It's about acknowledging that, I think this was in the context of him talking about how important it is not to kill yourself, not to take your own life, even if you have combat trauma, because you're lucky that your trauma isn't other types of trauma that he personally would have rather been blown up in war than to be traumatized in some of the ways that someone like me has been traumatized. So to me, that is a interesting point of synergy to talk about how, wow, does that mean that someone like that, a real warrior, a real military combat veteran would tell me their story of trauma, and I would tell them my story of trauma. We'd say, hey, you know what? We've served and we're veterans of different theaters of war, and we both have trauma. Let's go plant some trees and start, instead of digging a grave for ourselves, let's dig holes and put trees in them and get the other people who are suffering and who haven't found this pathway to come and help us, so that none of us kill ourselves or each other. And that we can be resilient and share that strength and resilience. That's the utopianism. That's the kumbaya vision that I have now, is that warriors of all kinds will discover permaculture and share with each other in that process of healing the land and healing each other, and then really really starting to think deeply and evaluate the opportunities that are sort of made available for that warrior energy to be expressed, and to start to say to ourselves, maybe we need to shift the consciousness of the status quo within the militaries of the world, so that they start to develop a sort of leave no trace battlefield, and that the greening of the desert becomes the greening of the desertifiers, the greening of the militaries who do so much, the most horrendous damage to nature, more than any oil spill, more than any corporate oil spill, more than any gross polluter, more than any toxic waste dumper. It is the perpetrators of modern warfare who are the ecocidal maniacs, and who sadly, because of mostly the financial opportunity for people who are poor, they have cornered the market on warrior energy. So the best energy, the best people with the best intention to be defenders, they're sucked into and co-opted into the most ecocidal force, and sometimes the most genocidal force. So yeah, I think there will be interesting conversations around the campfire when liberals and conservatives, lefties and righties, warriors of all different backgrounds get together and say, hey, if the real fight is to defend the beauty and the purity and sanctity of nature that is our mother and that provides for all of us, maybe we need to apply our warrior energy to defend nature and the earth, and not just sign up for a paycheck to go fight Uncle Sam's wars or whoever else's wars because of a perverse incentive that we have no other option. And if we could only get billionaire oligarch backers to put some money behind some permaculture operations, then we could be recruiting. And certainly myself, I've got a list of people who take money for work who are former military that do private contracting, and believe me, if I had billionaire oligarch backing for tactical permaculture projects and operations, then it would be a very interesting coalition of elite warriors working together to learn and teach the arts and sciences of permaculture design. And lo and behold, the boom and bang is gonna be able to, the swords to plowshares is gonna be permified in a way where all of the violence on earth that is taken for granted, that all these military budgets are financing, it can be hacked from within, and warriors can demand a safer working environment. For me, after hearing that Daily Show episode about this sort of revelation that occurred, that it's not just in theater combat zone explosive shockwave TBI that is causing people to lose their minds and suffer so to the point of becoming basically paranoid schizophrenic and going on kill crazy mass shooter rampages in public, that is rooted in this paradigm of explosions and gunpowder and all kinds of different high-tech evolving explosive weapon systems. Could you imagine if, workers have had to organize, unionize, and strike to force their employers to create working conditions that were less toxic and less deadly. Imagine if the warriors of the world, and I tip my hat to Manowar for their title track, Warriors of the World. If the warriors of the world organized like factory workers for better working conditions, I think we would obsolete the boom and bang. And if that means plasma rifles a la Terminator? Maybe plasma rifles, if the batteries were less toxic, that the moving in a direction of laser weapons will be the way to green the battlefield. I don't know if that's possible. At this point, it seems like the inefficiency of producing high-powered lasers is not going to... It's almost the same paradox, ironic paradox of electric vehicles and whatnot. It's just... It's robbing Peter to pay Paul in terms of the toxic legacy of these processes. So I would love for an anachronistic tactical permaculture where we're all fighting with crossbows and slingshots and bows and arrows and swords even. But there is a possibility that warriors of the world who become aware of the toxins that they're exposed to might just say, you know what, I'm not a chess piece, I'm not a pawn, I'm not going to be used to fire infinite rocket launchers and machine gun rounds and grenade launchers and grenades and all kinds of mortars and artillery. I'm not going to be a cog in that machine because I will come out the other side effectively deaf with tinnitus. And my wiring for my brain will be so mangled that I'll become a paranoid schizophrenic, paranoid schizoid. And I'll be a liability and not an asset to the country that I'm supposed to serve. That's the narrative that is shaking out. I believe they said something like a million American service members were deployed in the theaters of Iraq and Afghanistan, and 450,000 of them are diagnosed with TBI. Is that half? And I know from what I've studied that only a fraction of a percentage of enlisted folks actually do the killing and the fighting and risking their life on the front lines of the combat zones. So between training and between just operating in the proximity of all those explosions, let alone actually pulling triggers and throwing explosives and launching and firing explosives by whatever weapon systems platform. That's why I say, are you the tip of the spear or are you the rubber of the tire? And are you just going to get worn out and replaced? I hope it's worth it. I don't say that to shame anyone. I just say, all roads lead to permaculture homesteading. And if we want to be warriors, let's be ecologically correct as well as tactically correct. And that may lead to a form of resistance where veterans appealing to Congress for the ability to explore entheogenic alternatives to the drugs that are pushed on them from the pill mills of Big Pharma and the Veterans Affairs, that complex, that industrial complex, I think we would have a safer and greener world with leave no trace battlefields where if you really had to use force, you could think out of the box and use force in ways that actually are refoliating rather than defoliating. I mean, I've said these bumper stickers enough times now, but hey, it's been a while, and I certainly have not sounded off on these sentiments since the current events and developments of the theaters of war throughout the world over the last year, a couple of years. Now, of all times, I think it's appropriate on this rainy day where I can do nothing but shelter from the rain and share a few sentiments and just sort of feel the pain of the families of the slain by that individual who had that the training-induced traumatic brain injuries that led to paranoid schizophrenic sort of meltdown, ultimately leading to him becoming an active shooter. That my sentimentality towards the victims, towards the family, and to the shooter himself, and to his family and to all of those who trained with him and who he served with. If he was 40 years old, spent 20 years enlisted, it's a lot of people that he did right by for a very long time. So this is an opportunity for pause, a wake-up call. And I don't think you can have a modern non-toxic war. I don't think you can have a war that complies by the principles of permaculture with people care being one of the three main ethics. If you had to engage in combat with people care as a law of armed conflict, I mean, I know how hard they try in terms of the legal context. I've really been putting a lot of effort into studying the laws of war, because I realize that's really the framework that gives the green lights for all of the theaters of war throughout the world that pay any supposed attention to the international laws governing warfare. It's very interesting to think about what would happen if ecocide becomes a war crime. There's talk about that. There was a lot of talk about that over the course of the last few years where ecocidal atrocities have been conducted. So I don't know how sharp the teeth are of the institutions, the global international legal institutions that would adjudicate war crimes of ecocide. But I know that the folks who work in those sectors would be very interested in what permaculture has to offer. So our work is cut out for us as permaculture designers who consider ourselves eco-warriors. I'm an eco-warrior, I'm a drug warrior, and I'm glad I'm not a combat veteran, because I don't believe in any of the wars that have been fought by my country since I've been alive. So I think I made personally the right choice to forego the opportunity to get a paycheck by being a soldier and signing up to be a tool of that military-industrial complex. But that does not mean I have any disdain or hostility for the veterans of it. I want us to work together. I want people from my camp and people from the veteran camp to work together to find where we have common ground. And it's not going to be on everything. It may not be on religious matters or fiscal matters. We may be on different wings of the bird, so to speak, of the eagle. We may be on different wings on some matters, but on what really matters and what trumps all is national security. Let's work together. And let's green the battlefield. And let's take more pride and ownership on what those battlefields are. And I think what's happening is that a lot of people who are disgruntled ex-military are realizing that the battlefield abroad is corrupt and is doing damage, that the emphasis on wars abroad has crippled and weakened the warriorship that's needed within our own nation, and that warriors need to come home and need to defend our home. And that can mean different things to different people. I'm not going to go into the politics of that because it's controversial, but I'll certainly have a conversation over the campfire with anybody about it. And there will be no need to drag each other over the coals on that campfire. We will find where we have common ground and be able to respect each other in person. So this is a prayer and it is an invitation. And I'm now about a year-ish something like that. I don't remember exactly what the date is that I officially launched, that I registered the domain. I don't know what the date was, but it's been, I think, at least a year. I think it's been at least a year that I have been putting out the smoke signals here, putting out the signals that I've got the land, I've got the training, and I'm willing to collaborate with others who want to extend and synergize and make tactical permaculture not into a threat to the establishment, but in a promise to make the establishment better and to improve it and to evolve it and to find meaningful synergistic relationships at all scales where we can partner and build alliances with people in a legally compliant, non-threatening, non-violent manner, and perfect the arts of violence for when they're needed the most, and that is against our true enemies. And I don't think it takes, I don't think that's that controversial who the true enemies of the United States of America are, because they're very outspoken. And you can fight them toe to toe at every front, or you can subvert with more nuanced tools. I believe permaculture has tools that, when deployed appropriately, would make friends out of enemies on a global scale. Instead of extracting and leaving a toxic, polluted wasteland in the legacy of our military bases and our operations and our wars, that we would create infinite ecological abundance and resilience and stabilize regions with our best efforts of ecological enhancement through permaculture design. There are two ways to win wars: by destroying the capacity for a belligerent to conduct war against you, or by exhausting or depleting or transforming their will to engage in war. So the question is, do we want peaceful, elegant, diplomatic, solutions to end war on Earth? Or do we want to try to play whack-a-mole and cut the grass, as they say? Permaculture designers, we know better than cutting the grass. We sheet mulch the grass so that abundance can be shared amongst all. So you want to cut the grass, you're going to be fighting that uphill battle forever. You want to sheet mulch the grass, you're going to build friendships out of enemies. You're going to build friends out of enemies. And I hope some of us shell-shocked, traumatized warriors can find the strength and resilience to survive together and continue the mission. Cheers.